Welcome, Dr. Prickett.
Thanks, Lynn. Thanks, Missy.
You're welcome.
Nice to have you here.
Yeah, it's
you
great
said,
to be here.
You said we could call you Jeff, so that's what we're going to do.
That's very fine for me.
So why don't you start by just telling us, I mean, I tried to, in my own little research at 5 a.m. sort of way, talk about what homeopathy is. It's always been a bit of a mystery to me, so why don't you unravel the mystery for us?
Sure. I think you did a good job. Homeopathy is a 200-year-old system of medicine. It uses small amounts of natural substances which stimulate a healing response in the body. So that's, I think, a technical side that people sometimes do get a little lost in. In homeopathy, we call that the law of similars.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened, Samuel Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy, he lived from 1755 to 1843. He was a physician in Germany, and one of his jobs was to translate medical texts from one language to another. He was fluent in multiple languages.
Mm-hmm.
And he came across an idea in several places, one being from some physicians in India, one being from Paracelsus and some other physicians, that substances that can be used to create symptoms can also be used to treat the same or similar symptoms. Now, at the time, there was a substance called Peruvian bark, cinchona. It was used to treat malaria. Now, the prevailing thought was that this substance treated malaria because it was very bitter. And Hahnemann thought, well, that's silly. There are lots of bitter things that don't treat malaria.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's something to do with this like to cure like concept. So he actually got some of this tincture and began taking repeated doses of it. And what happened was he developed alternating chills and fever, which is a symptom of malaria. It's a prevailing symptom of it. So that got him started, and he began using then a variety of substances in the same way by taking repeated doses of them to see what symptoms would develop, and then using that to treat similar symptoms.
Okay, so this is a great example, and it is my big question about homeopathy. So the Peruvian bark had the same symptoms of malaria, but was there something that was really essential in malaria that was also in Peruvian bark? Like, was the bark, this sounds funny, but infected with malaria in some way, or is it just that it's a symptom that produces a similar symptom?
Yeah, it produced a similar symptom.
Okay.
So it fell into this, you know, law of like to cure like. I think maybe a modern day example that might help. When a person has allergies, they go to an allergist, they find out what they're allergic to, and then they're given small amounts of that substance. And that helps stimulate an immune response.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's kind of a modern-day conventional medicine use of this concept.
What about a flu shot? Is that the same thing?
Well,
immunization?
Yeah, immunizations. It is kind of a preventative, like-to-cure-like concept. I think the allergy shot idea is a little bit more clear. But sure, you're given a small amount of like the flu virus, and the body builds up a resistance so that when you're exposed, in theory, you don't get those symptoms.
So is the flu shot not a homeopathic? What distinguishes homeopathic with like versus like with just a conventional medicine or prevention?
Yeah, it's the way the remedies are made. So they're made by a process of dilution and succussion, and both steps are really important. So
succussion.
These are succussion, meaning the remedies are shaken vigorously at each step of dilution. So it kind of energizes them. And this is where it gets into weird science, and we don't really know clearly but we do know that when we look at these things and the activity of these remedies in a laboratory setting, that they do, in fact, have some effect that just diluting something alone will not have.
Okay. So one of the things is homeopathy is aimed to do is to remove toxins from our mm-hmm. bodies mm-hmm. that are mostly environmental toxins, or that's one of the...
Sure, it can certainly do that. There have been some studies where in India, where there were people in some communities were toxic with arsenic. So they used a remedy called arsenicum album, which is homeopathic arsenic, which is very small amounts. I mean, some people freak out about that. You know, they think, oh my goodness, I can't take arsenic. But we have to remember it's in very minuscule amounts in things like broccoli. So, mm-hmm. you know, so when you give the homeopathic dilution of arsenicum album to people who have arsenic poisoning, it seems like the body, well, what happened is the body was then releasing the arsenic that was stored in their body.
Okay, so what about certain types of poisoning, like the poisoning that can take place from fluoride, for example?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there some homeopathic remedy for that? Or for, we spoke about last night, mercury, which is a not so subtle poisoning.
Sure.
Homeopathic remedies for that, what do they look like? What are they?
Yeah, there are over 2,500 homeopathic medicines. So one of the concepts of homeopathy that I think is important is you have to look at the entire picture. So it wouldn't just be you take this remedy for this thing and this remedy for this thing. You have to look at not only the entire symptomatic picture of physical symptoms, but also the mental emotional state. It's one of the things that attracted me to homeopathy as a psychologist, because some of these remedies really have mental, emotional, personality states to them. And when you start to understand how it fits into the whole picture, then you can isolate the one remedy that, or sometimes two remedies that fit the entire case.
Okay.
So it's not a matter of saying, well, maybe I have some fluoride, I've taken too much, maybe I should get rid of that. Or, you know, you have to look at everything.
Mm-hmm. What, can you give an example of a reason somebody might come to see you?
Well, yeah, homeopathy is used in a wide range of health challenges. It can be used for first aid situations. We had a situation in our home, actually, just last Thursday, where our cat fell from a banister 15 feet to a wooden floor, and homeopathy has really brought him back. Well, we, of course, had him assessed to make sure there were no fractures, right. And he did have some fractures in the ribs, but no other damage. But, you know, it can be used for first aid purposes and really do well. I mean, I think people who are skiers and bikers and hikers around here should always have arnica with them when they're out. Arnica montana is a wonderful remedy for that first injury.
I've heard so many great things about arnica, and I was going to say, I think that's probably the most well-known homeopathic remedy, arnica.
I've never heard of it, so
where have you been?
Well, I'm not the only one, I'm sure. No. I'm sure there's people out there who don't know what that is.
She never gets injured.
Yeah. Arnica is a flowering plant that grows in high altitudes, actually.
Okay.
But it has an effect for stopping bruising, for helping to stop bleeding. So when you have that kind of soft tissue injury, when you take a fall on the slopes or when you're biking, it's a great remedy to take immediately after an injury. The sooner the better. And it can help to, in fact, some plastic surgeons are even using arnica after surgery because people get less bruising with it.
Okay. Oh, nice. Yeah. And so I've seen, for example, with arnica, the lotion that you rub on topically.
Yeah.
But one of the big components of homeopathic medicine are the little pills you put under your tongue.
Yes.
And tell us why you do that. And is it something about the absorption there?
Yeah, they absorb sublingually.
Okay.
Yes. So it's just an easy route to get the remedy into the body.
Okay.
So yeah, many medicines are taken sublingually. You know, you can get sublingual B12 and many other things, but that's just the preferred route for homeopathy.
Right.
Although it's a little challenging to get my cat to keep a pellet under his tongue.
Well, you just press his nose really hard with his jaw.
So I just pop it in his mouth and he just, you know, keeps it in there for a second and swallows it. But, you know.
But when my kids were babies and they were teething, I did homeopathic sublingual.
Chamomile.
Is that what it is?
Probably.
Okay.
Chamomile.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're always naturally occurring in nature. But are they ever some sort of chemical? I mean, we have arnica; it's a flower. Mm-hmm. Chamomile; it's a flower.
Yeah, about 75% are from plant substances.
Okay.
The rest of the of the homeopathic materia medica is composed of some animal remedies like Apis mellifica, which is honeybee. It has some wonderful uses, but also some remedies are made from minerals, metals, and then some from other substances. Like there's a remedy called hydrogen, but there are just a multitude from pretty much every area of the kingdom.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things can homeopathy help with for just everyday ailments?
Yeah, and we were starting to talk about that, but first aid, but then acute illness, it's really wonderful for flus and colds. It can be really helpful. In fact, the first time I ever got a homeopathic remedy, I was just learning about it, and I started to feel ill, and I just knew it was the flu. Now, my usual course of illness with the flu was that I would have a fever for 4 or 5 days. It would break in the middle of the night. I would wake up perspiring, and then, you know, I would feel better, but I would have cold symptoms that would last probably a good 2 weeks. Now, that was my usual course. So here I am coming down with the flu, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to try this homeopathy stuff. There was a physician in Orlando, which is where I was living at the time, and he was trained in homeopathy in medical school. He was about 80. He had never taken anything except homeopathy his entire life. He was raised on it. Never even an aspirin, he told me. This is at 80 years old.
Wow.
I had pretty classic flu symptoms. He gave me a remedy, said take it every 2 hours. I remember it clearly. I started on a Thursday afternoon. Friday, I felt better. I mean, the fever wasn't gone, but I felt better. I was able to do stuff, but I, you know, took it easy and rested. The next morning, Saturday morning, I woke up, and the fever was gone. And it did not come back. Sometimes it comes back in the afternoon or evening. Mm-hmm. Didn't come back. It felt to me like it melted away. I did by Sunday, I was completely well. I was, you know, probably 98% at least recovered. And
what did he give you?
It's a remedy called gelsemium. It's a classic flu remedy. There are many flu remedies. So, it just depends on the symptomatic picture. I know some people were getting the stomach flu around here recently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's another remedy that's very useful for stomach issues and flu.
I need to know that because I'm the only person in my family who hasn't had it yet.
In fact, in your entire neighborhood.
Yeah, I think.
So does this
wait, what's it called?
Oh, sorry.
So I want to make one other point about what happened to me as a result of that. Oh, yeah. That remedy changed my underlying susceptibility to the flu.
Wow.
So I never got that same course again. Since that time, whenever I've gotten flu symptoms, it's always been 24 hours in, out, done. And it's just been so much easier. But that's one of the beauties of homeopathy, and I think where it really shines, is it can actually change the underlying vulnerability to illness so that either if you do get ill, it's much milder, or you don't get ill at all.
And Good. That does sound like the allergy shot situation where, for me, I was taking allergy shots and my allergies are so bad I couldn't go outside, my eyes wouldn't open, and then after a year of these shots, then all of a sudden it's like I'm out running the trails at noon or at dusk when the allergies are the worst. And so is it kind of that same concept?
Sure, absolutely.
Ooh, that's a good one. So first of all, we're speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Prickett. He's from the Homeopathy and Natural Medicine Center right here in Park City, which is along with Karen Carestia's
apothecary.
Yes. Oh, I always have a hard time with that word. And that's right down by Kearns and 224 in Park City. So I have a question, Jeff, about, you know, the amount of toxicity that we have in our bodies on a day-to-day basis, either from our diets, our lifestyles, environmental toxins. Is there a point that we are too toxic to be able to accept homeopathic remedy?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that partially depends on the individual's susceptibility. Again, it really comes down to, you know, what we come in to the world with in terms of vulnerability. And some people are just more sensitive to certain substances like, you know, heavy metals or other toxins. And they tend to succumb to those things more easily. So I think that's one issue, but I really do think it's the total load. So that's why in homeopathy you have to look at the entire picture. But there are some situations where you really have to clear out environmental toxins directly, and especially you mentioned mercury earlier, and I think mercury is one of those that sometimes you just have to. There are several ways that you can pull mercury out of the body, and you just have to clear that out in order for someone to really see the benefits of homeopathy. Hahnemann, again, the founder of homeopathy, called those obstacles to cure. Mm-hmm. They're just things that interfere with successful treatment. And
those would interfere with any type of treatment,
Type of treatment, yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And many types of disease, too, making you vulnerable to many types of disease.
And one of the things I didn't talk about, I mean, we talked a bit about first aid and acute illness, but homeopathy really shines in chronic disease. But you do have to remove any obstacles to the person's recovery. Some people will, you know, they'll say, you know, I've never been well since a medication, or since I've had this emotional trauma, or, you know, since something happened. And you have to address that in homeopathy, either with a remedy or by dealing with whatever that substance perhaps is directly.
Is it, so is one of the tenets of homeopathy that once you feel better, you stop taking the treatment?
Yes.
And so that's interesting to me, because with a lot of modern medicine, you are prescribed, say, if you have antibiotics or something, you must take the entire course, even if you feel better on the first day. So can you talk about how that's different?
Yeah, and that really depends on whether it's an acute or a chronic issue. But as in an acute illness, for example, as a person starts feeling better, they can reduce the frequency. So you might start them on a remedy every 15 minutes or every 2 hours. As they get better, you can then say, take it every 4 hours, take it twice a day. And a lot of times I'll say, keep taking it once or twice a day until 2 or 3 days after the symptoms have completely resolved.
Okay.
But you do stop it. And it's, you know, the nice thing about homeopathy, and one of the wonderful things about it, is it's not meant to be a permanent treatment. It's meant to get people off of treatment.
Okay. Yeah. So when you were mentioning about your experience with the flu, mm-hmm. and it was this particular strain, there are so many strains of flu. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, how do you know? I mean, is it something that, you know, we would all need to come and see a practitioner or an expert like such as yourself versus sort of self-prescribe and, you know, go down to the natural food store and just get some kind of flu homeopathic remedy?
Yeah. Well, you know, I will say that it's hard for someone who hasn't looked at some of the materials, and there are books on how to use homeopathy at home, and there are home remedy kits. So one of the many reasons I like it is that it's very empowering to people who decide they want to do that. But what you have to do is to match the remedy to the person's symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So some people who get the flu, you know, will have more GI stuff. And, you know, and so then that's going to point to certain remedies. Some are going to have kind of the typical malaise, fatigue, maybe aching of the shoulders and neck. That's going to point to another remedy. Some people are going to, I talked about emotional states earlier, some are going to feel very irritable and they won't want anybody in the room. They won't want light. They will not want any sound. That's going to point to another remedy. As long as the person is willing to learn about, you know, what this remedy states are, they can certainly self-prescribe for mild injuries and certain acute illnesses.
Okay.
So is there one thing I think a lot of people suffer from is migraines.
Yeah.
Is there a homeopathic,
Yes.
Got a little trip up there. For migraines, what can people do to help their headaches?
Yeah, there are many, many homeopathic medicines that can be used for migraines. And I would say one of the classic ones is a remedy called belladonna. It's where a person may have a one-sided headache and they get throbbing sensation, their faces, it gets red, and you know they're sensitive to the light and sound. That's a kind of a classic picture. But you know, you could have 10 people with migraine headaches. They could all try belladonna, and maybe one of them will get results from it. That's more of a chronic issue, And really, chronic issues are best treated by a homeopath. It's hard to treat yourself for chronic illness.
Now, I'm wondering, is there a distinction, or what is the distinction between herbal remedies and homeopathic remedies? And I can't think of the one that women take for during menopause with hot flashes. There's one that's quite popular that's maybe an herbal remedy, or say something like St. John's wort that mm-hmm. people take for a mood elevator.
Mm-hmm.
How do those two things differ?
Yeah. Well, one of the big differences is how they're made.
Okay.
So the herbal remedies are made into a tincture, typically, mm-hmm. and the person then takes, you know, how many, whatever number of drops. And with homeopathy, you start with the tincture. And then, as I mentioned before, you go through this process of diluting it. And then you go through that vigorous shaking. Mm-hmm. That's typically done by machines now. And then you dilute it again. So it's a much more dilute substance, but that process energizes it, so it works differently. You know, we talked about chamomilla regarding teething. You know, chamomile is a nice herb. It has a gentle, relaxing effect. But when a child is teething and you're giving them the homeopathic remedy, chamomilla, same substance, you can take a child who is screaming from pain and they are just irritable and agitated, and within minutes, you give them the right potency of that remedy if it's indicated, and they could be calm. Now, there's no way the herbal tincture will do that, but mm-hmm. the homeopathic will.
Okay.
So many homeopathic medicines are made from common herbs, but many are not.
Right. Yeah. Okay. This has been really fascinating. Has answered a lot of questions for me.
And I still have one more question.
Okay.
I need to know the name of the remedy for the stomach flu in case I get it. The one that's going around town like wildfire.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the exact symptoms, but there are a couple of remedies that really could be playing a role there. The one that I've had a couple people use has been a remedy called Arsenicum album.
Huh.
We talked about that
arsenic.
One earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There's another one called Nux Vomica. Nux Vomica is...
it sounds like vomit.
Called poison nut. It's actually Nux Vomica. Here's a tip for the holidays if you over imbibe.
Uh-huh.
Nux Vomica for hangovers is great.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness.
So, but yes, Nux
my
Vomica...
gem for the week, for the season.
Nux Vomica can also be a remedy used for this kind of the stomach flu sort of symptoms.
And so if say, someone in my family gets this flu or the stomach illness that's going around, do we just come into Alpine Apothecary and talk to Karen or somebody there and you'll recommend something, or do we need an appointment, or how does that work?
Yeah, usually an appointment would for something like that. I mean, Karen knows a lot. She's not a homeopath, but she knows a lot about herbs, supplements, and mm-hmm. things, and certainly she can point people in a good direction there. But as far as something like that for homeopathic treatment, you really need to see someone at least until you learn more, and you know a person can really start to see you know the patterns and what remedy is needed.
And so, how do they make an appointment with you? You are located inside Alpine Apothecary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's a website that people can go to. It's
www.homeopathy-utah.com. Okay.
And they can contact me there through email or telephone.
Okay, and you have a really beautiful website. I like it.
Thank you.
It's just fun to look at. Dr. Jeffrey Prickett, thank you so much for joining us
thank
today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure,
yes.
And best of luck with your endeavor here. And I'll look forward to taking some of that, what was it called?
Nux Vomica for our hangovers.
Yeah.
And our heavy drinkers.
If indeed we imbibe at all during the holidays.
Yes.